that, and we'll be able to edit that. And let's see if we can go live here. Live now at, okay. Start broadcast.
Okay.
And start recording.
Oh my god. We're live.
White zombie. Horror of Dracula. This Island Earth. Frankenstein meets Wolfman. House of Usher. The Thing. Teenage Frankenstein meets Teenage Wolfman. Walking Dead. The House on Haunted Hill. The Phantom of the Opera. Good evening!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Little Monsters Movie Podcast. I'm Dino.
I'm Ted. Good evening, children of the night.
Yes, yes. And today, we're going to be talking about Martin, 1977.
I believe it's 77. Yeah, it's the movie that Romero made right before Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
So, had you ever seen it before?
I'd never seen it before.
Never seen it before.
Yeah.
All right, just to start, did you like it?
I did like it. Wasn't it good? It was different.
It was very different.
Yeah, 1970s film. So
absolutely.
The one thing I just right off the bat, you know what it reminded me of?
Hmm.
First of all, he's a perfect serial killer, but he reminds me of Dexter.
I read that online. When I was looking up some stuff about the movie, someone else had mentioned that.
Yeah, he's
I never watched that show. I kind of know. He's like a serial killer, but he's a cop,
Dexter.
Right? Right.
But he would hide with his syringe and jump the people, you know.
This is what Dexter would do?
Dexter would do this. And
totally lifted it.
Oh, it was like he was exactly the serial killer. Dexter, 1977.
So whoever wrote Dexter thought, no one's ever seen this Martin movie. I'm going to take this idea and put it in my show, and there you go. Because I bet a lot of you haven't seen Martin. It's probably his least known film.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, it's his favorite of the films that he's written and directed. It's his favorite. Well, I hope you did your homework. Mm-hmm. I hope you watched it first. It is kind of hard to find. It's out of print in this country.
It is a hard to find movie.
I don't think it's on Blu-ray anywhere. I think in England it's on DVD still, but here in the States it's gone. So it's kind of a hard film to, you know, I don't think it's even on YouTube to watch for nothing. It's a hard film to come by. I don't know if Netflix has it or anything like that. Oh, you looked?
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Martin's nowhere to be found except going on eBay or whatever else. So,
there's other ways to find it. I'm just not going to encourage those ways because it's a good movie and you should pay for it. It's a good movie. If you haven't seen it, it's sort of a vampire movie, but that's the fun of it. You can really watch this from two different ways. And it's cool that you had never seen it before. I remember the first time I saw it, I thought it was really a well-done, cool, atmospheric kind of movie, and we'll talk a lot about, you know, different things, and I just hadn't seen quite, you know, a vampire movie be dealt with that way.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we always talk about this, the era of each horror, you know, movies. The 70s are just, this is just totally 70s, of course.
Right.
And, you know, down to the hairdos and the way they act and the how, I mean, it's a great movie for the older people who grew up in that era.
This movie cost $80,000 to make.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah.
It's
a very low
side,
budget, but it's effective.
Right.
All the actors are pretty good. They were either... the main character, Martin, is played by a newcomer at the time called John Amplis. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else, but he's fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, he was very, very good.
Plays it really creepy and sympathetic at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that Romero worked with Tom Savini, who we all know is a special effects guru, but he actually acts in this movie, and he did help with the special effects and stunts, but he acts in this one. This was where they first kind of hooked up. And then followed up with Dawn of the Dead after that.
And this is more of the... I wouldn't say gory or, you know, but...
Definitely some blood. This is probably the most bloody film we've done.
Yeah.
It's about as far as I like to take it. And but it's just good. So if you haven't seen it, I guess we could say in a nutshell, it's about a young man, 1970s. He is traveling by train. This is how it starts, from Indianapolis to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We don't really know what's going on with him yet. We just know he's by train. We kind of see him eyeball a woman getting on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it kind of gets creepy. He's in his little... He doesn't have a compartment. He's just sitting like in the general population seats on the train.
With the other humans.
Right. he might be human. And but he paid attention to where this woman went. And that's what kind of makes him... He's like kind of like a serial stalker, rapist.
Yeah, total serial killer in him. Yeah, I mean
he's and he sneaks into her room, and he fills up a syringe with some kind of narcotic. We never actually get to see exactly what narcotic it is.
Right.
And I love when, you know, in his mind he kind of pictures her looking all beautiful, and when he does get into the room and she sees him, she's got that mud pie on her face, and,
yeah, the good old
which
man.
Gets wiped off because there's a struggle. She struggles with him. And what's cool
was actually a blooper, I think.
Yeah, because there was nothing on. Yeah, because
he runs at her, and the mask is all there.
And then later on, it cuts, and there's nothing on her face, nothing at all.
I mean, and in the struggle, I'm sure he didn't take a rag and, you know, get this.
Well, it was fresh. Maybe it wiped off real quick.
Could have been, yeah.
And it's really kind of eerie. I mean, she's fighting. I mean, every time, and he does this a couple of times in the film, and these women fight. You know?
This is borderline exploitation.
Yeah,
in some parts. I mean, yeah.
And it's really eerie when he's. It's just frightening when he's saying, "I just want you to go to sleep. I just want you to sleep," and you know he's got
very
this needle.
Dark, yeah,
I mean, you. It's disturbing.
Disturbing.
It,
yeah.
It is, and you know he's putting the hand on her mouth so she can't scream. He can't stand when the women scream, and this is how he deals with his bloodlust. Okay, let's just say. For instance, he is a vampire, okay? For him to drink blood, he has to... he can't stand if they're awake. But it's also tied in with a sex thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, because I think they imply that he has relations with them while they're... Because he even kind of says that later on in the movie. He can't do it with someone who's awake.
Right.
So
it's right back again to where, I mean, of course he's in the movie, we'll get to him being a vampire or not, but
yeah.
The whole serial killer thing.
Or whatever, you know, he doesn't,
right.
I mean, he does end up killing them. I don't think that's his intention.
Right.
I think that's incidental that he kills them, but he definitely.
But all the deep-seated urges, you know, to.
There's definitely the bloodlust and the sex thing tied together in this. Yeah. So he drugs him, strips her, and then he just kind of corrects. They don't actually show any kind of, you know, intercourse in the film.
No.
But it's definitely implied he's caressing the body, he's touching her where he wants to touch her. He disrobes her, he lays, you know, he kind of cuddles up next to her. And then it's kind of graphic, you know, he lifts the arm up and takes a razor blade and cuts the arm and the blood just... falls all over him, and he starts, you know, lapping it up.
Yeah, that's the gorier part of it.
Yes,
you know, but
and then he's really afterwards. They show a couple of moments, and I like how the movie shows these moments. You know, where he cleans everything. And this is 70s. This is probably before. Well, I'm sure they had fingerprints, but he probably doesn't have any fingerprints on file because he's very careful.
Right.
He is very careful about where he goes, who's watching. Because possibly, he's been doing this for a long time. And
most likely. And, most serial killers do.
Or vampires.
Or vampires.
And it's weird, like, even after he's drank her blood, he's kissing on the body. But then he goes and he cleans everything up real good, makes it look like a suicide, puts razor blades out, he has pills, puts pills out.
Yeah, he did his homework.
You know, quietly slips out, goes back to his seat, puts his shades on, starts reading a book. That's essentially how the movie starts.
Which is why the comparison with Dexter. I mean, Dexter did his homework. He was basically raised a serial killer. His father, who wasn't his real father, because if you watch it, you'll find out. But
The only thing I know about Dexter is reading a parody in Mag Magazine. I know really nothing else about it.
You're missing one of the best series out there. I love that show.
Really?
That was really, really good.
I was cheap. I didn't have Showtime. That was a Showtime.
but he did his homework. He knew what he was doing. Never got caught. Kind of cared about what he did, you know, because the whole psychological thing. He never took innocence, you know, away. So, and cleaned and everything. Did he just go after bad guys?
Okay. So, well, I don't really have a problem with that.
There was a purpose behind his.
Okay.
Because his stepdad, whatever, his father raised him, would prepare him for life. And because he knew he couldn't change him as a child. So he took him on that course and said, well, if you're going to do this because you can't stop. I mean, he found him killing animals and stuff. Everything a serial killer would, you know, do.
All right. Because he didn't try to get him any help or anything.
No. I take that back.
You did?
No. Yeah, I mean, years of therapy, therapists and stuff, you know, to the point to where he found out I didn't going to be able to change him.
Right.
So, you know, that's when he trained him. You only kill who needs to be killed, the bad people and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of goes along with this movie and stuff. So.
There's definitely, I mean, if you say, like, the syringes and the homework and stuff like that, I mean, most serial criminals probably do their homework.
Right.
The needles alone, I didn't know about that, and that's intriguing, because that's really kind of unique to this film, even though this is more of like a vampire-type movie.
Right. There's a lot of things in this movie that are different than most of the horror films from back then.
Absolutely.
Even from the needle. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying there's not other movies where they've drugged the person before they, you know, killed them or did this, but, I mean, it's a big part of the what entails his, you know, vampirism.
And right. So, and really, when we get down to the nitty-gritty of this film, it's kind of, is he a vampire? Is he not? There's leanings either way. When he's about to take a victim, he usually has these flashback memories that are in black and white and gritty. And it looks like it's not like 100 years ago or anything, but it looks like it's maybe the early 1900s because the cars look older. And he's, you know, feeding on someone or doing the same thing, having a relationship with someone and drinking from her and torches. People are chasing him and it's pretty much that same scene every time he is about to take a victim. He has flashbacks to these. There's even an exorcism, you know, where he's tried to be exorcised. And so
it's either that's a deep-seated thought that he's, you know, his psychosis is made.
There's a family issue going on, a family dynamic going on. His family in Indianapolis, whoever is caring for him, has passed away. And his next closest relative is a great uncle or something like that, named Tadakuda, hardcore Lithuanian Catholic, and he's the one that we kind of start learning what's going on. So the train, you know, gets to Pittsburgh, and this old guy in this stark white suit is waiting for him, and pretty much just calls him Nosferatu right off the bat.
Yeah, he looks like a lord.
Right, we don't know who he is yet. And, you know, you will come with me. We have to take another train, Nosferatu, whatever, you know. And it's from him that we kind of learn that there's supposedly back in the old country that a family curse. And he never actually, you know, says vampirism or whatever. He does say that there's, I think, does he say three? That there's three of them still alive.
Right.
And Martin is one of them. He lives with his granddaughter.
So they kind of try to keep that mystery going through.
Right, them, so. Right. Kudatata lives. Or Kudatata. Tadakuda.
Hakuna Matata?
Hakuna Matata. I'm going to mess that up, guys.
We're talking about the Lion King, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
First in a series. they're going to take another train to a suburb town outside of Pittsburgh called Braddock. And that's where the family lives now. It's the uncle and his granddaughter. I can't remember her name, but I know she eventually married George Romero. So I don't know if they met on this movie, but... And that's kind of the cool thing. A lot of family and friends worked on this movie. That's why it was made so cheaply.
That's George Romero. He's known for that.
Well, you know, when you want to make a... But you know what? It doesn't even really... The low budget shows, but the story is good.
No, that doesn't... Yeah, without it, no.
You know? And I can overlook all of that, because I don't even notice. I don't look at that and say, that's a cheap movie.
No, not at all. I mean, it's the atmosphere of the movie that makes it.
Absolutely.
And the actors and stuff, so yeah.
Oh, and I just got to throw out a scene because I really like it, is when they're waiting for the train to go to Braddock, Martin excuses himself to go to the bathroom, and there's just some dude sitting on the toilet, and he's smoking, lighting his match on his jean jacket, and I don't know why I like it. I like it because later on, in that same bathroom, he's there again talking to some other dude, and they're trading pieces of the paper back and forth. It's just something I think is funny in that part. But, they're riding to their town, and but when they get home is when we start learning, you know, he's looking through the old family album, and we don't see, like, pictures of Martin, but supposedly there's a family curse, and Tadakuta's granddaughter has grown up listening to this stuff all her life. She's never believed it, and he tries to explain to her that, you know, he is Nosferatu, and he tells him, you know, like right from the get-go, my job is to save your soul and then to destroy you.
Yeah.
And
his character was pretty good, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really old country, hardcore, you know, just absolutely means exactly what he's going to say.
Yeah.
And truly, truly believes in this family curse.
And Martin's, I mean...
He is insane. He says it's a sickness.
Right.
He's like, you know, it's not magic. It's a, and that's one thing he definitely says in the movie a few times. There's no magic.
Right.
You know, he takes him to the home. He warns him, don't speak to my granddaughter. She will speak to you, but you don't speak to her. Right. You do not come in my room. And he puts him in, and he's got like the top floor in his room. And there's garlic hanging on the doors. And Martin even shows him, there's no magic. He takes the garlic, he bites into it. He's like, see, nothing. You know, he takes the crosses, puts it on his face. There's no magic in these things.
Right.
It's just a sickness. It's not magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the movie kind of takes a turn from other vampire movies.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
This is like the anti-traditional vampire movie. You know, it's like Romero said, you know, I want to make a vampire movie, but I want to make it different from everything else. I'm going to take all those ideas and flip them
exactly
over.
That's exactly what he did. I mean, it is totally different than any vampire movie out there.
Because, you know, Martin can... He doesn't have to sleep in a coffin.
No.
He does not have fangs, never has fangs, uses razor blades. He can go out in the sun.
Yep.
But sometimes the sun bothers his eyes and he has to wear sunglasses.
That's understandable. I mean,
right.
I know that
he said, especially
me, but,
when he doesn't have to drink blood every day.
Right.
But he says, like, when he's getting the shakes, that's what he says, when I'm getting shaky, that's when the sun really starts
bothering my
eyes.
When the DTs
kick in. When the BTs, you know, whatever the blood tremors.
The blood tremors. Yeah.
Basically, you know, Martin's going to work for the family, work at the grocery store that Tadakuta runs, and work in the neighborhood as a delivery boy. And he's just going to keep an eye on him. And, oh, remember the other warning he gave him. You cannot kill anyone from the town. You know, if you do, I will destroy you.
Nice to have those rules, I guess.
Yeah, you know. So that's, he doesn't tell him you can't kill anybody. Just, you can't kill anybody in the town.
Yeah, not our town. Come on. Yeah.
So, and that's kind of where we get introduced to the kid, the granddaughter.
I love the store, too. I mean, it's a great little store. Who would love to work there?
Not just a little. And another thing that I really like about this film.
About 50 cans of large tomato
soup. Lithuanians, they like their tomatoes. I don't know. But you know how, like, the old vampire movies are all, you know, like my hammers and the universals are all gothic and everything. Yeah. And I like how this one's just the flip end of it, where it's dirty cities, and you see old churches and car yards where cars are being smashed. And it's, I almost see it as, like, you know, this movie's version of those gothic, you know, scenes.
Yeah.
You know, the steel mills in the back churning out the black smoke, and so, I mean, it is. It's real life. Yeah.
It's
gritty, and you got this little town, and you see the big churches in the background, and it's dirty, and.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in a way that...
Kind of like we grew up in... Well, I grew up
in the 70s in Cleveland. 70s. Yeah, there's not much difference.
Yep.
I mean, when I first grew up, it was a neighborhood that looked just like what's in the film here.
Yeah. Garbage on the side of the street.
Well, yeah, I mean, we lived in steel towns. So, yeah. My dad worked in steel, and, you know, a lot of people here still do. So,
yeah. But he's got such a sinister look in his face, man.
I mean, there's times you feel bad for him, and there's times he's just so loathsome.
And he wasn't in any other movies.
I'm sure he had. Nothing that I've seen.
Yeah.
I guess if I did a little bit more research, I could probably find something he's been in, but... Oh, it just... Oh, I almost just want to leave him here and just, you know, this is it.
And who's the lady that's with him? Is that his cousin, or...?
I guess this sort of would be a cousin if you're talking about the granddaughter of Tata Kula.
She looks like Maya Rudolph.
I don't know her
name. I just threw that out there. I
can't remember her name. I want to say it's Christine something. Hmm. Or maybe that's her name in the movie.
Christine. There was an evil car named Christine.
Yeah,
movie. So anyways,
So Tada Kuda, he's at the store.
Yeah,
and this
Tata
is like
runs down the street. Oh, I mean, Cuckoo Tada movie. Go ahead.
And this is like where the granddaughter and Martin start kind of talking a little bit. He doesn't really talk to her. He's doing what he's supposed to do, but like, boy, she's just flapping her gums and
she's a yapper.
Yeah, we kind of feel like
she likes to talk.
She's not happy where she's at.
Yeah, she gossips a lot about the her coworkers and stuff like that.
Tom Savini plays her, I guess, boyfriend, whatever. Not really a serious boyfriend, I think. Just
something for on the side, I think.
I mean, later she describes him as her way out.
Of the town. She calls him up when she needs something, you know, late night.
I mean,
booty call.
That's what he does. He scats around, but.
You'll have that in a movie.
And the whole film, the uncle, Kuda, he just rips into Martin all the time, belittles him. It's always Nosferatu. Nosferatu.
He wants to stress that.
And
he also looks like the colonel from Kentucky Fried
Chicken. He does, kind of, yeah. I mean, he's always wearing the... He does not always wear the white suit, but it's on most of the time. He's got... And he can work the white suit.
Oh, I want a white suit. I want to wear a white suit with a thin black tie and some black and white
big fat cigar. And...
and my cane.
Yes.
Yeah, I need a cane. But
so I'm glad you really liked it, from...
Yeah. I mean...
Not anybody else I know.
That's what's good about this. I mean, we're throwing out some obscure movies. Mm-hmm. And
I got to think a lot of you out there haven't seen this. Know about it, but right. And it's cool. I remember, like, at the Cinema Wasteland conventions we have here, they had a little reunion with them. I know John Amplis had been there before.
Okay.
So I mean, there's people that do know it and do like it. So, we've had little reunions here at our twice a year horror convention that we have.
Yeah. Cinema Wasteland
that we have here, just kind of cool to go to. Yeah. And
I think it's cool that George Romero went from like. He did a zombie movie and then jumped right over to, I'll do a vampire movie.
I mean, he's done lots of different films. He's done, he did The Crazies in the 70s. People he did that, which they've remade a lot of his movies. There's even talk that they're going to remake Martin, which I can't imagine,
I can actually...
I could see them doing it because they remake everything.
Yeah.
But,
it is what it is back then.
Right. I mean, they could certainly up... take the story, but I just think they'll PG-13 it and, make it for the Twilight crowd, and there you go. That's my fear. But, I mean,
With this one, I don't think.
If
this
anything,
is really dealing with the blood.
Well.
Yeah, but, I know what you mean.
Remake it so that they'll put this out on Blu-ray. I mean, because that's what they always like to do. They like to bring the original out and tie it in. So, yeah, remake the hell out of it so that I can get the damn movie on Blu-ray. All right?
Yeah.
So...
I have to tell you, the other day my alien fell off the shelf.
Oh!
And his head's off, too.
We've had this guy a long time.
So.
You've had him a long time.
I can glue it. See that there? Actually, I'm just going to tie up some wire so that while we're broadcasting.
He just hangs there.
And he
fishing
floats,
line.
And he floats around a little bit, which is what I'll do. So maybe next time you'll see a floating throughout the whole broadcast.
Yeah,
but anyways.
Get some fishing line tied right there. You'll never see the string.
Yeah.
Because we've got a higher budget on this show. So.
Good old fishing line. I'll find it somewhere. Anyways.
So Martin, he's doing his thing. He's delivering meat around the town. And he sort of strikes up a relationship with one of the women. Kind of like a lonely housewife, Miss Santini. I think her
You're
name
better
is.
With names than I am. That for some reason, names fly out of my head, but and, you're pretty good with that, so...
You know, yeah. You could tell she's the lonely housewife. She's, you know, got an unhappy marriage. You could tell that right away.
Yeah.
And,
like when she goes grocery shopping and just comes out with the curtain. Oh, she's pissed off. You can tell she's just got a bad life. I mean, that husband,
she asks him if he does any handiwork stuff. And so that's setting up for later on.
Yeah.
But,
Of course he will, because, you know, right. She spotted her right off the bat.
But, Martin's... You know, he's getting that bloodlust. So he actually takes the train to Pittsburgh because he can't feed on anybody in the town.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to go to Pittsburgh. He visits a couple stores, shops, and outside of a grocery... And I love this part. Mm-hmm. Outside a grocery store,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these women keep coming out with the groceries. And there's all these... Not all black guys, but a bunch of black guys, maybe a white guy. And they're all just, you know, catcalling the women as they come. Hey, Mama, can I carry that bag for you? Can I drive you home? And... I mean, these poor girls. Well, I'd find another grocery store. I mean, they got nothing. No one calls a cop. They're all just
people bothering in front of your store.
But in the background, Martin's kind of hanging back there too, and he does notice. And this is probably to me the creepiest few parts of the movies where he sees this woman who he's kind of interested in,
mm-hmm.
and I got to remember the bloodlust and the sex thing are all together.
Yeah,
and. There's several scenes of him just following her. Like, she's writing out a check at a store, and she moves her head, and you just see Martin standing right behind her.
Oh, yeah. He did a good couple really quick, the camera work and cinematography of the scenes itself. We're good.
Yeah, the editing. Eerie. Romero actually, he edited this film as well. You know, he wrote it, directed it, edited it.
Yeah. Did a great job.
And, the editing kind of shows, he's looking at the check, mm-hmm. To get the address. Follows her to her house. He's really careful. Like we said, he does his homework. He's scoping out, and the house is actually kind of interesting. It's one of those weird kind of designed sort of houses. But he's stalking up on the roof of the garage, checking things out. There's like a skylight, I think.
He's all in black.
Yeah, he's looking down at them sleeping.
But
he's scoping things out around the house. Cords, windows, all that jazz. Learning schedules, when someone's going to be gone, when they're not going to be gone.
That's
how they do it.
And I would guess that's, if you're a smart vampire, that's what you would do too.
He could just as easily go and get some, which he does later in the movie, get like some bum off the street.
Yeah.
But no, he does it this way. He picks women, pretty women, and he does it this way because
fulfill his needs.
Right, which is more than just blood.
Right.
So that's where it's kind of like the dual thing. Is he really a vampire? He doesn't fit any of the vampire molds, but who says that vampires are what, we see in all the other movies?
Exactly.
Maybe there actually is a curse, but maybe he's just a disturbed young man who has a vampire fetish, or, he just, thinks he is one, and maybe there's some issue in the family where they're all kind of kooky.
It could be.
And that's what I like about the movie. You can watch it two times and get two different ways of looking at it.
Sorry, I gotta get the coffins in here.
Oh, that's right. Vampires.
Because they are vampires. Yeah, there we go.
And I like he even goes to the store and buys a garage door opener because he notices the husband using a garage door opener with the big antenna. And you love that.
Did it work? I can't
remember. Yeah, he bought, because it was just like a generic whatever, he looked.
So they could go to the store and just get it, and you could probably go and open up people's garage doors.
In this movie, yes.
Oh, boy.
And I like when he goes to the store, he just like points at the window, and there's just a guy right there picks it up for him. And can I go to a store and do that? Go to Best Buy?
Right. No. Well, there was an All in the Family. I know that ain't horror or nothing, but the old guy made a garage door opener. Or no, it would ring the doorbell to a house. Like, okay. If it's raining outside, he's in a car, and you would press it, and it would ring the doorbell.
Okay.
But I don't know why I'm throwing this out there, but because we're talking about garage door openers.
Yeah.
But anyways, good idea, right? So if you ring the doorbell, and if somebody comes up and answers the door, it works.
Okay.
But the only flaw was, and he died right after this, so he couldn't fix it. But the flaw was that when he pressed it, all the doorbells in the whole area started ringing, so Archie Bunker couldn't, make his millions, which he thought he would get. But
get so rich quick schemes.
Yeah. But getting back to Martin.
Martin, I love how he's just, You know, he's got his black on. He sneaks into the house, turns the light bulb, you know, so it's nice and dark in there. And
telling you, man, Ted, you got to watch Dexter.
Okay.
Because there's so many. I know this is 70s, and it's, but for something to click in your head, like, so similar, you know, in storyline and plot and everything.
The main writers, they watched this movie.
Oh, I would think so.
Somebody said, hey, watch this movie, tell me what you think.
Yeah.
And even if you, I mean.
I don't know if I'm even, I think I'm covering up my face and stuff. I got this camera at a weird angle.
You got to get a little closer. Maybe I should move over.
No, I'm fine.
But this is another one of my favorite parts of the film, because he goes in there thinking he's going to do his thing to this nice lady. Mm. Oh, and before that, I'm sorry, I should backtrack a little. Remember, he knocks on the door and pretends he's deaf. He's got like some little sign that says, "I am deaf." And like, he just kind of like wants to look in the house, you know, kind of get an idea. And the husband's there too, so he realizes there's a husband. And that's when he starts, when we said he was watching the routines and who comes and who goes. So he knew when the husband was going to be gone. He's there waiting.
He pulled out all the tricks, man, in this movie. Yeah.
And getting back to what I really like is when he goes into the house, you know, he gets there when he knows the husband's gone. He knows he's gone, gets all his stuff together and comes back because he knows she's going to be alone. Well, she ain't alone.
No.
And he has another one of those little flashbacks. Yeah. The same thing, that it's flashbacks the whole time. It's just edited differently. Mm-hmm. But it seems like every time he's going to get himself a woman, he has that flashback.
It's almost like a dream, too. You know how sometimes...
Right, and it is very dreamlike.
But it's different. You know, like the set might be different. Mm-hmm. Something's a little bit...
It's not always the same. Something. You're right.
So it's like kind of a dreamlike, you know...
And the scenes outside have like the mist, like we see in the old Universal movies. And it's got that dream... You're right. It's got that dreamlike quality to it where you don't know if it's just a daydream that he has or if it really is a memory. He looks a little different. His hair looks different.
Yeah.
His clothes are definitely different. But, again, maybe this is just something that he's fixated on. And, he busts into the bedroom getting ready to do his thing. And she's doing some other dude.
Yeah, she's all naked.
She's cheating on her husband.
He thought she'd be alone, and here she is with some other guy.
I feel like the guy's trying to talk to him. You know, oh, I'm sorry, you know, it's not what you think. And the lady says, I don't know him.
And she don't even know who he is, Martin.
No, I mean, I think she recognizes him from the door. They mention that later on.
Okay.
But she doesn't know him. I mean, he's just busting the house.
But she's giving excuses like, oh my God, he's going to tell my husband or something.
Right, and well, because Martin, you know, he has to think fast. Mm-hmm. He's got to get rid of the guy. So he takes that needle and jabs it right into the guy. And I work in the medical field. You don't give shots into the scapula, which is where he's giving these shots at.
Yeah, it was breaking a bone.
All right? Here would be better.
Yeah, you would have particles of metal things in your... Yeah,
but we see that a lot in movies.
Right, right. but then they could claim that as an alien implant. And, No? You don't think?
Well, once they test the metal, become, I think it would come back as surgical steel.
Probably. But yeah, you gotta love his rampage during this scene and this part of the movie.
And he doesn't, he doesn't try to leave the house. He it's like almost like a cat and mouse thing. He's still in the house. The dude who got shot with whatever narcotic, he's in there. He's like, you gotta call the police, call the ambulance. And I love what she's saying. What is she saying? That I can't call anybody.
Right. Yeah.
You're not supposed to be here.
You gotta get out of here.
If I call, they're gonna find out that you were here. And I mean, it got infected with Christ knows what. And you're not gonna call them an ambulance because you don't want to get caught. And then he's kind of creepy because she's trying to make a call, and Martin's got one of the other phones, and every time she hits a button, he's...
He's messing with her mentally.
So that she can't call out. And he's just biding his time because, you know, this dude's kind of big, and he's going to have to jack him again with some medication. So, I mean, he's ready. He knows he can't just leave.
Yeah, he didn't fall down right away from the needle.
Yeah, I really don't know what it is. And another good question is where he's getting this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, where is he getting these medical vials? Like I said, I work in medical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a drug user. Maybe people who use drugs know how to get those things, but
yeah.
I don't know. They're pretty locked up. I don't know.
Hey, you can find anything on the street, I guess.
Yes. But, you know, he's going to inject the girl, too.
Yeah, well, the big guy finally falls down. Right. Finally takes effect, you know, the big lumbering lion. Yep.
Call somebody! And he even tells her, you know, I'm not going to hurt you because he was here. Yeah. You know, so he's going to, and that same thing, don't scream. He's always got a, I just want you to fall asleep. It's so,
eerie,
it's disturbing to watch. I mean, because he's the main character. He's the one we're supposed to, you know, sympathize and empathize with. And he's despicable. But that's just, you know, sometimes you feel bad for him and sometimes he's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, John, that was just great acting. I just, you know, he's got the look and his voice. And I got to mention the music in this movie, too. The music's really effective in a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
I think one of the guys who did the music is, he was in that band Goblin, who did a lot of the scores for some of Romero's movies and Dario Argento's movies. So if you kind of remember, like, the music in Dawn of the Dead, that's the band, so it's kind of got that little flavor to it. Yeah. A lot of cool music, especially during the dream or flashback scenes,
mm-hmm.
Some really cool music there.
Yeah, he had it going on during the late 70s there with his
stuff.
Yeah, I haven't
been much of a... I love, you know, his zombie movies, but the last couple haven't gripped me as much as...
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we're going to climb up to now, you know, recent, of
Survival
course, but...
of the Dead. I guess you could say they're...
They got a place for zombie fans and stuff.
Right.
I mean...
And I guess, you know, the only thing I can say about him is that he does try to make some other statement with those particular films. You know, he's usually got something else to say besides, hey, here's a zombie movie. You know, Dawn of the Dead, kind of like commercialism, and Day of the Dead had the whole militaristic thing going on, and that was during the 80s and the Cold War, and Land of the Dead was post 9/11, and the haves and the have-nots, remember everybody living in that nice building, and everybody else living in the ghetto outside. what was the other one after that? Diary of the Dead.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that's the last one.
No, Survival of the Dead was the last
one.
Okay. I don't remember that one as well. I did watch it, but I don't remember it as well. I know Diary of the Dead, kind of like the whole information thing, you know, where you get so much information so fast, and what's real and what's not, what's true, what's not, and that's kind of like what they dealt with in that film. So, I mean, he does always at least have something he's trying to say. I think that's his vehicle for saying things that he feels going on in society, and not that all his films are like that, but the zombie ones, I think, definitely took that. You know,
they all have that. Well,
even the first one was kind of like some racial issues, so. That's kind of like my little take on Romero. But in the 70s, you're right. I mean,
was his peak. I mean, you know, he peaked and then he kept going. But,
I guess we could say even bad George Romero is better than some people's really good stuff.
Exactly.
So I'll watch his worst movie as opposed to, you know, some schlock's best movie.
Right.
So.
Oh, well, Martin.
So what happens? He drags the other dude out to the yard.
Yeah.
I think he just, like, buries him with leaves.
He's going to wait for it to just start smelling and rotting.
Right, no one's
going
to find
what's that smell?
Guy.
The guy left his garbage out for a couple weeks, you know? Yeah, I mean, you know, it won't be no big thing.
But, and then I remember he...
And he cleans himself again.
He goes in, he cleans himself, and then he goes to the woman. Like, he has to be clean first.
Right.
Then he goes to the woman who he's knocked out already, and the scene's just kind of him reaching for the breast, and...
Yeah.
I mean, what's...
With the flashback.
What's any guy gonna do? All right.
Even a vampire.
Exactly. I mean. And yeah, again, every time there's a woman, there's always this kind of romantic flashback, and I gotta say, probably like 1910s or 20s, maybe, it looks like it might take place in.
Right.
And you know, he does his thing with her, too. They don't show a lot. But he makes sure to clean up all the blood and hang up all the pictures right.
He is doing the actual... They don't show it.
Right.
But he's actually performing the...
The deed, you mean?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, are you talking the blood or the sex?
No, the sex.
I certainly take it that way.
Yeah.
I certainly feel like he cannot talk to a woman or be with a woman who's awake.
Right.
And it's so after this part when he's cleaning the house. It was when we first... Another thing I really like about this movie is the radio DJ. A couple parts in the movie, there's a radio DJ that's always talking, like... Mm-hmm. But like They say from 6 to 6. If only a great...
And the radio in the background.
Talk show would be on the radio from 6, six to 6.
12 hours.
I know. Like Art Bell hours. For 12 hours. but that's... Speaking of Art Bell, that's what I kind of view this as. This guy kind of reminded me of Art Bell.
Wow, yeah.
Because...
You're right, yeah.
He... Martin starts calling his show and talking... You know, he says, I'm a vampire. And he starts talking about, you know... dispelling the myths of the movies and what it's like in real life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the DJs, I don't think he's really believing it, of course, but he's loving it.
Just like Art Bell, you know, he'd have a vampire. I think he had a vampire hotline once, and all the vampires would call up and say...
The listeners love it.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be, I guess, you know, if you're doing a radio show out in the middle of the desert, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, to...
And that's Martin's way of letting the truth out.
You know? Right.
So it kind of alleviates what he's doing to a point. Mm-hmm.
It gives him someone to talk about. He doesn't have, you know, he can't talk
nobody really in his life.
Can't talk to Tata Kuda about it. He's
can't
not
talk to any women.
Right, because, he's not going to tell his cousin or
because he can't get emotionally involved because of his psychological, you know, issues.
Right, he's not going to talk to his other the female family member about it.
Yeah, Simba. So, I mean, Akuma. No.
So this radio DJ is really like the only person he can talk to and let these things out, let him know how he's feeling. And this happens a few times in the movie, and I really like those parts.
Oh, yeah. That's a really cool part, too, added into this movie.
Where whenever the conversation gets too deep, he hangs up. And, you know, he doesn't want to give away too much. But
just enough to alleviate what he's done and to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. He always says, you know, there's no magic. You know, there's no, you know, don't have to sleep in a coffin and... You know, he's like, I don't have power over people. He's like, you can't make people do what you want them to do. And he talks about the needles. And that's so eerie. I mean, if I was on the other line, I'd be like, that's freaky, you know?
Yeah.
Like, are the cops listening to this?
Right, right.
You know, because he says, you know, things are much better now that I have the needles. And, you know, I always try to be careful. And
yeah, you would
it's
think
so much easier with the needles. And
picking up on this. And
yeah, because he said, needles? What needles?
Yeah, next time he calls in... Let's get a trace on his phone, you know, something, but people want, he wants the ratings. He doesn't care, you know what I mean?
Right.
He should have a heart. You know what I mean? I love it. Yeah.
What happens?
Does he ever mention in the movie that I don't think he ever says anything about he's going to live forever or he's immortal.
No. Towards the beginning, the granddaughter of Kuda asks him how old he is, and he says, oh, I'm really old. And when she says, he's like, you know, 80, I think he says 84.
Okay, yeah, okay, so that's really the only part where he, like, kind of goes...
He doesn't say that he'll live forever, but...
But he says he's old, and he's... Okay.
Right.
And
he was born in, like, 1895 or something like, or 1889 or something like that they said he was born in.
Yeah.
Then I think after that, we follow up with the scene where Tato wakes him up in bed, says, you know, I'm not going to be seen in church without you, and, you know, you're going to church. And this is another part I like, really, because they don't even go to a church. It's some condemned building, because, you know, they mentioned that their church burned down. And it's just like in the top floor of some building with some fold-up chairs, and they're talking about raising money and having rummage sales and things like that. It's just...
They just found an old, free, abandoned
exactly. Room. You know, they probably would have had to pay to have it in a church and film there. So it's like they do this, and it's just, you know, out of necessity, you get this cool little part. And I think it's awesome. I don't know if that's what it was planned to do, but I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's
and,
definitely cool.
The priest... That's George Romero.
Right.
Played by George Romero. Has a little small part
his
in the
cameo
movie.
Cameo in the movie.
And he's the new preacher at the church. And Tata Kuda invites him over for dinner, I think, like the next day or whatever.
Yeah.
And I love he tells his girl, you know, you make good meal. And when he does come over, it's really just, I think, so Tata Kuda can grill him a little bit on what kind of a priest he is.
Yeah.
You know, what do you believe? you know, he actually sits him down, you know, do you believe in demons and that people can be possessed by the devil? And he mentions The Exorcist. He's like, I thought it was fantastic.
That was awesome.
I mean, here's a priest that likes to smoke and drink his wine, you know. Mm-hmm. They ask him if he wants some coffee. No, but I'll have some more of that wine.
I was going to say that's how they were in the 70s. Very liberated, you know. That was a very cool part, though. Mm-hmm. And Martin, once again, he's trying to get some answers. You know, he's dealing with everything he's dealing with, right. And trying to talk to the priest. But it ain't working. None of this is working.
And the priest even mentions another priest who he knows, an old priest, old-time priest, who supposedly did an exorcism. And Tadakuta pays close attention to his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not long after that. I think Martin's sleeping, like, on the couch down in the living room or whatever. Tadakuta just comes in with this priest behind him, this very priest,
mm-hmm.
and they start performing an exorcism ritual on him, which I am told that was actually pretty authentic. Like, the what was spoken is
authentic. A true exorcism.
Right, the real stuff that was spoken during an exorcism.
Yeah.
Tadakuta's holding his candles in a cross shape, and the wax is burning down his hands. And
he's just as crazy as in the opposite.
And that's what I'm kind of getting at. Is this just a family thing where people are just kooky? And there's no investigation to see if Martin really is possessed. This priest just goes right in there and starts just based on what Tadakuta says.
He probably slipped them 100.
And they flash back to a scene that we hadn't seen before of him being someone else trying to exorcise the curse. But, you know, he says it's not a demon, it's not a devil, it's a curse. That's what they say in the film.
Well, you know what? Through vampire law...
And he says it's a sickness.
Yeah, that's true. Because, well, mm-hmm. vampire lore, they talk about it being a curse.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, curse and sickness, definitely two different things.
And it doesn't happen to, you know... Like, I think he even mentions at one part that Tadakuta, that he hopes his granddaughter doesn't get married. He's talking to Tom Savini. They're, like, at a bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And Tom Savini's complaining of, you know, no work. And he even mentions that it might be better off if she doesn't get married. And I think that's because he's, you know... You could have offspring that might have this curse again.
Right.
So
thus saying he can, if he's a vampire, but yet he could have a child.
Right.
So.
And like,
kind of goes against him believing that
he's... But he's not dead, you know? I mean, right. Martin is not, dead. Like I said, this is another example of the genius of the film where they turn the whole idea of vampirism upside down. Maybe it is just a sickness and something that's in your head, not, you know, a fangy, capey,
right.
you know, blah, blah. Kind of so, no, and...
really different take on it.
Definitely. And probably one of the most memorable parts of the movie after the exorcism scene is Martin runs out and Tadakuta is trying to chase him down. And that's where he's got the... He scares him. He comes out of the... Like the mist with the vampire costume on.
Yeah.
He's got the... Remember we used to have the old plastic teeth? With
them. Yeah, that was actually pretty
ones natural. That were just... They were like drool cups.
Yeah. You put those in your mouth and it just... sobs up into your mouth.
And he had the cape and the cake pasty paint on there. Mm-hmm. And he scares the hell out of him.
Yeah, he's going... Oh,
yeah, doing the sign of the cross. He's holding up his little rosary and you know, Martin's
the
like...
The plastic teeth don't, you know... It scares him just as much as not having it there.
And, you know, and I just love it. You know, he's told him before there's no magic, and this time he says, you know, it's just a costume. It's just a costume. And
it's funny how Martin just mm-hmm. plays with his mind, too.
It's a really brilliant film. I mean, at this, you know, he's trying to show him, you know, I don't know. Like, I can't help it. It's... You know, your ideas are all wrong. It's not... I don't know. It's requires thought. Yeah. It's food. The movie is food for thought. And,
yes.
And that's why it's Romero's best movie.
Yes.
It's his best movie.
We'll have plenty to talk about if you really dive deep into this movie.
There's plenty.
Yes.
We come up... All the while, there's a few scenes through there where he's doing some work for that Mrs. Santini... Yeah. Who he's kind of met and befriended. She asks him to come over and do some odd jobs. And she does try to flirt with him a little bit. Like, she rubs his head a little bit. And he kind of pushes her away a bit at first.
Yeah. And she needs to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, he's uncomfortable.
Right,
you know, he's never been, like, friends with a woman before.
Right.
And
it's funny that he throws that in there, too, in mm-hmm. the movie. You know, this little relationship with, you know...
Right.
Showing that he's just, it won't work. It can't
right.
Have
he says, with even with the DJ, you know, maybe someday I can just, you know, do it with someone awake and just be together and not, you know, need the needles this time. And
that's where you're sympathetic for the right. poor guy can't help himself, you know, psychologically, because his mind is just right. not going to get him there.
And know? This Miss Santini seems to be that one that's going to allow him to do that. And I remember he comes over the one time and... And she says something. Like, she doesn't even have her skirt on. She's got, like, some kind of outfit. She's not in her underwear. But, you know, she's just, like, putting her skirt on. And she says something to him. I forgot what he said, but he says, you know, you want me here for sex, don't you? And,
of course.
And he says, you know, I've never done it. And in a way, he hasn't. Right. In the normal way. And then the next thing is, you know, they do. They make love. And it's his first experience like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he kind of feels a little bit more human and, you know, starts to, it's just that one point where he starts to feel normal again. And I think that might have been a turning point for him. He didn't mm-hmm. have the bloodlust associated with it this time.
Right.
And then when he's getting dressed and getting ready, she's laying on the couch crying. Mm. And I think that ruins it.
Of course,
you know, because he says, what did I do? And she says, nothing. And he's like, are you afraid you're going to have a baby?
His mind goes into frantic mode.
Right. She's like, I can't have babies. You know, he just doesn't get, you know. The reason she's crying is because, you know, she's cheated on her husband and this young kid and innocent and who she thinks is a virgin. And, you know, it's a mix of emotions why she's crying.
And he just doesn't understand it. You know?
And I think, unfortunately, that kind of, you know, takes away that momentum that he might have gained.
Yeah, took him right back. Washed him right back down the drain. Poor kid.
Down the drain.
Yeah.
We get to where Tadakuta and I think it's Christina, I think it's her name, the granddaughter, they have a big argument. Some of it's about Martin and some of it, you know, she's just tired of the strictness and the, you know, the family curse. She says it's all BS and he gives her a couple of good slaps and they look real.
What? If George Romero's going to pay them,
he's like, really slapper.
I think he says that. He goes, if I'm going to pay you, you're going to take a slap.
I don't know. It's going to be his wife. I don't know.
It's a lost video.
Oh, is it a deleted scene? I've got to find it.
Yeah.
And she and Tom Savini's character, they take off. And, you know, Martin's left alone with Tadakuta in the house.
Yeah, Lord Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Sanders.
Lord of the Manor.
Yeah.
And then I remember the scene after that where, and this is where I'm talking about when he and Miss Santini are kind of, I think they're having a picnic.
Yeah.
And they have the beautiful sight of the steel mill. Like there's the river and the steel mill over there.
It's not your typical picnic because even the grass is brown.
Right.
And sunburnt.
And it's just dirt. Gritty.
But
I think that's really cool. I mean, it just,
which is actually... If you're in a city like this, that's going to be a picnic for you.
Right. And that's just, just maybe coming from this part of town, too. Not much different from Pittsburgh, except their football team sucks.
Two steel cities that are just, that's the type of town it is.
That's kind of like the Gothic architecture of this movie.
Right.
Is that. And, it's just something that, you know, I really think Romero did really cool. I don't know if it was a conscious thought, but, you know, instead of having castles and mansions and things like that, we've got these things, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it just took it to the streets. Right. I mean, you know, and just like Taxi Driver. I mean, they got that, it's that feel grit. To it, too, yeah. The city grit, yeah.
Exactly. We see a few scenes of Martin getting, you know, belittled by customers at the store. And again, he follows. You know, he doesn't do anything to him. And I think he's in the background of the scene.
I don't blame him here,
talking
though,
on the radio.
Because you really wouldn't want to be belittled at a grocery store. Like
no,
that, if you worked
in front of all those people and the food.
I mean, he's got enough going on mentally that he doesn't need to be belittled like that.
I like the scene where he's just following the old lady around. Like, he's not going to do anything to her, but he's like, I know where you go, I know what... And he says that to the guy who's on the radio. Mm-hmm. You know, I know where you go, I know what you do, and, you know, I just let him go, but I know everything about him. Yeah. And I just think that's freaky and a cool thing to do in a movie like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, he's starting to get the shakes again. You know, and this is where he goes after the... He's so desperate that he just grabs a bum a dirty, smelly, stinky homeless person.
Anybody can get for some blood.
Right.
Yeah.
And the part, he takes a baseball bat, and it almost sounds real when he's cracking him on the head with it, just that, thunk, with an aluminum bat.
Oh, my God.
I hate that part. And, it takes some dirty piece of glass and slices the arm. And blah, 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 blah.
It's almost like Faces of Death. I mean, it's a very realistic view of... You know,
right?
It seemed real,
and I don't know why he does this because he's got some blood on him, but he decides to like bust into a department store, and that sets off an alarm, and cops are showing up like that.
But he's got to get different clothes on,
right? I don't know why he didn't just run. I mean, because this is kind of like the beginning of the end here.
Yeah.
Because
he needed to get out of the stuff that he did the evil deed on.
I guess because he couldn't show him at home,
right?
Because Tanakuda knows when he's going and leaving, because remember he tied the bells. I mean, the granddaughter ends up cutting him off later on.
Yeah.
But he cut bells up just so he could hear his door opening, knows when he's coming and going. So he changes clothes, he gets out of there, cops are, you know, shooting or chasing him. And then there's the flashbacks of people with the mob with the pitchforks and the torches chasing after him too. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like inadvertently, he leads them into like a drug den. Where a drug deal's going down, and there's a guy that looks just like Rollo from Sanford and Son. He's got the hat and everything. You know, hey, Pops! But there's Rollo doing a drug deal. And Martin kind of runs in and is like, you know, and the other guys who are in the deal are like, you know, hey, who's that? You know, like, well, nobody, he's just a kid.
Get him out of here. We got business to take care of.
And then they go back. Yeah, it's like, you know, like the Mexicans and this black dude.
Yeah.
And then the cops come in. And it just, I mean, it's the big action scene.
Right.
In the movie.
You call it that. But yeah, it is.
But you know what? For what it is, it is. You know? Yeah. I mean, I've seen worse.
Oh.
And, it's a big shootout. People jumping. Rollo's got the big cigar in his mouth, popping off rounds.
Get out of here!
You know, he catches a bullet.
Yeah.
One of the Mexican guys is in a car. I think he catches a bullet in the head, and people are getting run over. And in all this melee, Martin gets away.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, he's the smartest one out of the bunch.
But there's some good effects. Are people getting, you know, shot in the knee? Good squib work.
Yeah.
This would have been Tom Savini. And the guy that gets flipped over the car, that's actually, he looks like a Mexican, but it's actually Tom Savini.
Right.
And there's some close-ups of, like, you know, getting shot right between the eyes and blood pouring down. And just cool. I mean,
wonder if this is where he got his concoction, the drug then. Probably not. This looks like a more skanky scene.
Yeah, this has been some coke or marijuana.
Yeah, what he gets is some top-of-the-line stuff somewhere.
Right.
Which we never know. But
so, Martin gets away, and this is he's going to wash up again.
Yeah.
And then we see the two guys on the toilet.
Yeah,
again.
In the bathroom.
You got the travel section, and they're going, I was in Mexico about 2 years ago. They're both just sitting there crapping.
Yeah, and
but this is what guys do.
The doors are ripped off the Johns. I mean, it's like,
well, that's how it was when I was in school. I don't know where you went. School.
No.
The guys' bathrooms in school never have doors. My wife can't believe me, but the guys' bathrooms in the stalls never had doors.
They didn't want the students to smoke and do whatever they did in there. So. I think I'm pretty sure that's what
I remember is in my phys ed class, because I'm pretty physical.
Yeah, you've been working out lately, huh?
Oh, yeah, I'm in shape, round as a shape.
You're doing, what, 300 bench pressing, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, I told him to wear a Superman
that's right.
muscle shirt because...
I tried lifting weights, but they're so damn heavy.
Yeah.
It's
just lots of protein and... Okay,
just in a sec. I remember in high school, in the locker room at phys ed,
there
wasn't even, like, you know how you'd have, like, the walls separate, the partitions?
Right.
It was just a toilet.
Really?
Like, in the middle of the floor in the back, you know, there's showers and stuff. There's just a toilet. And there's always, like, that one dude at a gym class that had to take a dump.
Oh.
And you're sitting there, you know, like, you know, washing up or whatever, and he's just sitting, you know, what's up? Yeah.
And they're just sitting there.
Right, there's just a toilet. Like, there were some urinals across.
We never had that.
Yeah, just no partition.
Toilet.
Nothing to, like, even remotely separate you from area. Just a toilet. Yeah.
Well, I know we had a gym teacher who sat just in the, after, like, gym class and after school sports and stuff like that. You know, there's the showers and everything else. But he would, he was the gym teacher who would come in and shower, too.
Oh.
Take his towel off, sit there on a little bench, just naked as can be, naked as a jaybird. Just sit there while everybody's talking.
Why don't you say his name?
I'm not going to say his name because even to this day, I'm not sure that was very copacetic or right.
I would have been very uncomfortable with that.
Oh, I was. But anyways, needless to say,
I wouldn't have showered.
Okay, we got off track here.
Yeah, but I mean, just good stories. But we're really coming up on the end of the film here. After Martin gets away and cleans up stuff, he runs back to. Miss Santini's house. I can't remember her first name in the film, but and this is actually kind of sad. He finds that she has committed suicide in the bathtub, and I love the scene because like just her eye, like this part of her face is sticking out of the water. The rest of her is under the water.
Yeah,
you know, she's got her glass of wine, whatever there, and her razor blade, and you know, I mean, it's a big blow to him. You know,
right.
It's you know, he had that one chance at maybe, even though she was married and unhappy. And I don't think this relationship really would have worked out, but it was something that he had never had before in his, you know, in all his years, whatever they were, whether they were 20 or whether they were 84.
Yeah.
And, you know, then the end of the film, he wakes up in bed hearing Tada Kuda talk, and he tells him, you know, I told you if you, you know, killed anyone in the town that I would destroy you.
And he
staked
them right in the...
A really graphic scene.
Very graphic, very gory, bloody... And this is another blooper too. When he stakes him through the heart,
yeah,
okay, and it ends, and he stakes it all the way through the heart.
Mm-hmm.
If you look right after that, when the scene comes back again, it's the stake is actually sticking up about 6 more inches out of the chest.
Oh, I see, I never noticed.
Just a little blooper.
Never noticed.
Thing that happened in the movie.
I guess when you're doing different, you know, shots, because you do different angles and stuff. You got to make time was probably of the essence.
Yeah.
But
very bloody scene, though.
What I find kind of sad is that he didn't kill her, and you know it's because of his relationship with her that he ends up, getting killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know then it starts going into some really cool music.
Yeah.
And the credits are rolling, but then you hear. The talk show host coming back on again.
Yeah, very cool.
And all these callers coming up saying, you know, where's the count? Whatever happened to the count? And because that's what the guy calls him. He calls him the count all these times that Martin's called him. Calls him the count. And then the camera starts coming down onto Tada Kuda's garden. And we know Martin's buried there.
Yeah.
And he...
very cool scene.
Places
very
a cross.
Cool,
you know, the crucifix right there. And, you know, you can see he's planting the grass and stuff. But what I really like is the last thing that's said in the movie. And it doesn't even sound like it's someone on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone that says, you know, I think my friend is the count. And I don't know why that just gives me like a chill.
Way they say it.
Yeah, just the way the person
just
says
the voice,
it.
Yeah.
You know, I think my friend is the count.
Yeah.
And,
Very... Very, the ending is just great. It's just
this last part of the movie is just perfect.
Yeah, even though he dies and what technically, you know, I mean, he's a serial killer, so he got his just deed.
Yeah,
although it was never really said. I know there's still that mystery whether there's a curse. He's a
right, and that's what's great about it.
You know,
it's great because you can watch it from two different perspectives. There's plenty to go on for both.
Right.
Depending on you and how you view the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's Romero's best movie, and I've seen almost everything he's done. And obviously, from what I've read, he thinks he's the most proud of it as well.
Yeah.
And for the budget and for, you know, probably how fast he had to make it and to get it out there and the fact that, you know, maybe a lot of people didn't really see it. It's not really remembered. You know, like movie buffs and stuff, they know it, you know, the horror. You know. But I think, like, just the average ordinary out on the street horror fan probably doesn't know much about this. They may know his Dead movies and, you know, like maybe Monkey Shines or Creepshow or something like that. But they probably don't know about this. It's more obscure. It's hard to find.
It is.
And, you know, it had its day on DVD, but that's gone. And,
yeah, it's
at least in the States.
This movie's for the very hardcore horror fan who gets it. You right. know what I mean? Who gets it and likes it kind of
it's too bad.
Feel to a movie. So.
It's too bad like when all the Twilight crap was popular that, you know, maybe the more mature Twilight fans could have got into this because of the whole sympathetic thing. Yeah. They don't really share anything except that he can go out in the sunlight too, but he doesn't
right. He glitter. Doesn't twinkle or glitter, right. yeah, whatever.
And guys at home, if you can't figure out how to get chicks, take your shirt off. Go outside during noontime, just sprinkle some glitter on you, and chicks will just come flocking.
Yeah, because they love Twilight, you know. I mean,
that's right, they'll think you're a vampire.
Yeah. Wow.
And
that takes us to this week. Yeah. Man. I mean, another good obscure pick.
Right, right.
I've been doing some obscure ones here.
Yeah, I think we got to get to something good, something that maybe you guys already know and can get your hands on for next time. So we'll post soon what we're going to watch for next week.
Yeah.
Make sure you do your homework and check the site.
Yes, check Facebook, please do. That's where we post everything, although who knows, Facebook isn't getting a lot of... Like us on Twitter, okay? Look up Little Monsters.
Like us forever. Like us on all that stuff.
Yeah, if you look at Facebook, I put links to everything up there, so, you know, it's there.
I'm not on Facebook. Well, I sort of am, just for this, and I don't do anything else with it.
Any idea on anything you like to...
Next week?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or how about anything that's coming out? Anything good, horror-wise, coming out?
I don't think there's any good movies coming out.
No, nothing good.
Last good movie I said was Monster Squad. It was the last good movie. Actually, the only thing I am looking forward to is Mad Max. I really wish it was Mel Gibson. I really wish it was a gritty old Mel Gibson doing this.
Yeah.
But I'm still... Just the fact that it's George Miller and it's his story, and I'm really looking forward to that. And it's really the only film I'm kind of... Maybe The Minions. Because I love The Minions.
Right.
But I'm not expecting that to be a masterpiece. But I'm just hoping that Fury Road is just balls-to-the-wall craziness. Road Warrior and...
Yeah.
That's really what I want. And every preview I've seen just looks better and better. So
it looks good.
You're
man.
Building up my hype, George. You better deliver.
Yeah.
but other than that, nothing else is really appealing to me. And
cool.
The horror movies seem to be all for the kids these days. So
yeah, pretty much.
So we'll try to pick something good for you next week. We'll discuss here shortly. And always, if you've got an idea, throw it out.
Let us know.
We'll do whatever movie you want us to do. If someone requests something, I think we would do that before we do one that we want to do. So
Because
I think that'd be fun.
Definitely. So that ends it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds good, man. Another good
prosper.
Week.